All right. Let's see. Good morning. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:03 on, Let's see, I'm going to go by memory. Wednesday, December 30th. 29th. Time is going quickly, but not that quickly. My name's Julie Fedorchak. Also present with me are Commissioners Randy Crispin and Brian Crashes. So we have a quorum. My opening comments. Well, today is the final day, surprisingly, for the final meeting with Commissioner Crashes. And I never would have guessed that this was going to be the case at our last meeting, because it's all happened so suddenly and as such a surprise. But I didn't want to let this opportunity pass without making a few remarks. First of all, so Brian, thank you for all your work. You have been a great team member, and it's been really fun working with you. And there's really three things that I've come to appreciate, three top things. There's more than that, but three things that I think Brian really brought to the commission that are really have been really valuable, and that is his business perspective and his willingness to talk frankly and simply about impacts to business and in all the things that we do. And that has been really helpful. We can't, we're a regulatory agency, and so we impact business. That's one of the main results of regulation. And so having a voice that is constantly trying to seek the proper balance is really helpful, and I think that'll be missed, and I'm hopeful that we have another person in your place that brings that same perspective, because I think Randy and I also try to bring that perspective as well. You brought it from your experience running a sizable business yourself, and so I thought that was really helpful. You also brought a lot of experience on personnel matters, and that was also super helpful in the commission. And we will miss that. I always appreciated your perspective on the personnel things. And with the workforce issues that everybody is experiencing, personnel issues are constant at the commission, just like any other agency or any other business. And then thirdly, your sense of humor. You have just an awesome, dry sense of humor. It's subtle. It's quiet. You have to be paying attention or you'll miss it. But it's really added a lot of levity to some serious situations, and also just been a lot of fun. So I'm going to miss your sense of humor as well. And I know that that will come in very valuable in the tax office. I can't say that you're leaving for more interesting subject matter, because I think it actually is probably the opposite. And it's probably hard to leave the Public Service Commission for an agency that has an even drier workload. But thanks for your involvement here. It's been really fun, and I've enjoyed, from a personal matter, enjoyed working with you and becoming your friend. So I know that'll come in handy in the next year as we campaign.
Thank you, Julie.
So with that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Crispin.
Well, I'll agree with all that, and then maybe just fill in a few points where I would just add to that. I too, have really enjoyed these last few years working with you. I was concerned when BK 1.0 left, and we got BK 2.0, and I'm concerned again, and look forward to seeing who BK 3.0 is going to be. But I know it limits the governor's options, but I guess it's the route he chose one time, so we'll work with it. But no, it has been nice working with you. In addition to some of the things that Commissioner Fedorchak pointed out, you have the kind of native North Dakota mentality. You grew up in this area, and I think that is always helpful. I've also appreciated that you keep the proper demographics of this commission. You know, two NDSU graduates and one UND graduate, that's important.
In order to keep the balance.
Keep it even.
Keep it even.
I spent four sessions in the Senate working on the Finance and Tax Committee. That was my primary committee the first, before I went to Appropriations. And it is more interesting work, I think, than a lot of people realize. But I agree with Julie. I would much rather be doing our work than that work. But I do also know some of the people down there. And Commissioner Rauschenberger and his predecessors have built a pretty incredible team that you will manage well. And so good luck on your future, and I just wish you all the best.
All right, well, thank you, Randy. Thank you both. If you had asked me this question 3 or 4 weeks ago, or had even asked if I would have envisioned this, I would have probably looked at you and said no, not exactly, but I want to start out with I'm excited about the new opportunity, but without question, and the chance to continue serving. It's when I looked, I was going through the decision making process on my end, and if it were to be offered to me after having an initial discussion, a conversation with the governor, you have to make that decision, be prepared. And it was incredibly difficult, because when I came to the PSC, and believe it or not, it's been almost 5 years. It would have been 5 years on March 17th. So just about 5 years. When you take on a new role, a new job, and you accept, as I did back in, almost 5 years ago, you think about the type of work you're going to be doing, you research, you go to the website, which I did, of the PSC. You start reading all of the things that are super exciting. And I, by the way, I think it's a fair fight, whether you're reading Century Code about regulation or taxes. I find them both incredibly interesting, but probably not everyone would feel the same way. But you go through this entire process of what you envision it's going to be like when you start the job. And the part you don't think about are the people. So from day one, I felt right at home. The staff welcomed me, incredibly supportive, and that never changed throughout my entire time here. But it also made me realize what's really important about why we do what we do. And yes, it's for the good of the state. It's for the betterment of the people who live in North Dakota. It's why we choose to serve. We could do something else, but we want to be here. We want to make tomorrow a little better than today, or hopefully significantly better than today. And we're always working toward that, but it's really the people that make it happen. My fellow commissioners, Julie and Randy, I could go on and on about what a privilege it's been to work with both of you. It's been a remarkable chapter, and it made the decision incredibly hard. But then I look around the room here, and I look at staff, and I've talked to staff on throughout the agency, and you realize just what a special place this is, and the quality of work, and the dedication that the people here have. It's remarkable. And the state is very, very fortunate to have all of you continuing the good work that needs to be done. So I won't even be a speed bump on the way out. So you'll have a new replacement in short order, I would anticipate. And my advice or comment to them would be, you're joining an incredible agency with some incredible fellow commissioners and an incredible staff, fantastic staff to work with. So thank you all for the privilege, because it's absolutely been a privilege.
Excellent. All right, thank you. And we will, we are setting up a time for staff and kind of just a smaller little farewell event with staff and all of us on Monday after work. so we can have a little bit of fun before you leave.
Look forward to it.
No lawnmower races, though. We never did manage to get that included in anything.
Okay, people are wondering. Okay, here's the short version. My family's definition of fun, and it usually happens around the 4th of July. We have a large gathering every year, and someone thought it'd be a really good idea to have a riding lawnmower with a cart behind it. And someone stands in the cart, now it's going very slow, but the driver is blindfolded, and you have to go through cones. And of course, you know, it hasn't broken up any marriages, because it's usually a husband-wife team, but the, you know, whomever is driving is taking directions from the one in back, and a lot of cones get run over. So, you know, we didn't do that. It might break a few safety protocol, but it's a fun time.
Well, two of us wanted to include that in the summer picnic, but there was one who rejected that. Oh, man. Now I know the criteria for the next commissioner. All right. With that, on to the agenda. We have a couple items on consent. I would like to move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. Alrighty, moving on to the regular agenda. I have three items, I think. Let's see here. Yeah. I move the commission adopt the order on motion for extension in Rugby Wind LLC, Rugby Wind Farm, Pierce County, citing application case number PU-05-47.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. So on October 3rd of 2005, the commission adopted the findings, facts, and conclusions of law and order on this wind project. In March 22nd of last year, they filed with the commission a request for an extension on the requirements for the light mitigation technology. We held a hearing on that extension on April 20th, and then on May, we staff filed a memorandum supplementing the record regarding the approval status of the LIDS technology. So the company originally requested an extension in order to be able to use the LIDS technology. We found out from the FAA that the LIDS technology wasn't really close to being approved, so we denied their first request for an extension. That was on June 9th. And at that point, they had to rearrange their plans and start make a plan for being compliant with the ADLS technology, which is what they did. And then on November 2nd, they filed a second extension request for the ADLS technology. We issued a notice for a hearing on that request, and we held that hearing. We have since the hearing learned from the company that, during the hearing and since the hearing, we have learned that they are only waiting on the electronics cabinet for their final development of the ADLS. They expected that shipping to occur on December 20th. They have constructed the road and the gate for the tower, and the tower foundation has been poured. They've installed the fiber optics to the tower. All of that was scheduled to be complete on December 24th. They testified that all 58 of the ADLS compliant lights were scheduled to be installed by the 21st of December, and that all the components should be on site for installation the first week of January, and that they expected to get the FCC license to operate in January, and that they would be able to complete all the commissioning and testing of the system in the first 3 weeks of January. And so they provided all that information to us during the hearing and in some information exchanges after the hearing. But this order states that given 10 facilities using the same available vendors and under the same deadline and the four-year time frame that has been given them to complete the installation ADLS, the commission determines that waiting for the approval of LIDS and a 2021 supply chain issue impact does not equate to a technical feasibility consideration, and we deny their request for an extension by this order. I think that pretty much summarized my the main information on this. We had a good give and take with the company. Appreciate their work to attempt to have this operational. We haven't heard back from them. Maybe it is operational. Maybe they were able to complete that commissioning and testing. We will see here by Monday whether they have filed with us a notice that they are operational or whether they're delayed. But at any rate, if they are delayed and miss the deadline, that'll be a separate proceeding to consider a potential fine for being out of compliance. What this order states is that they haven't met our threshold for receiving a waiver from the deadline, which is December 31st. And so with that, I think I'm ready to support this. There's only one more outstanding request after this. We can talk about that more later.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, let's see here. My second motion, I move the commission approve the tree and shrub mitigation plan filed on December 8th in Danbury Green Pipeline, North Dakota, LLC, 12-inch Cedar Hills Pipeline Project, slope and Bowman siting application, case number PU-19-294.
Second.
So on December 8th of this year, Danbury Green Pipeline filed its tree and shrub mitigation plan for this 12-inch Cedar Hills South Unit Lateral Carbon Dioxide Pipeline in Slope and Bowman Counties. The project resulted in the removal of two trees and 13,500 shrubs, and they will be replaced with 27,500 trees and 12,000 shrubs, which is far more than is needed per our guidelines. The mitigation requires replanting two species for every species removed. Danbury replaced with almost a 3-to-1 ratio, increasing the likelihood for success. And they're also, their plan involves sponsoring plantings with the North Dakota Petroleum Foundation's Planting for the Future program. They offered landowners the option to plant replacements on their properties, and all of the landowners declined. Therefore, these plantings will be consolidated in the planting through this North Dakota Petroleum Council Planting for the Future program, which the commission views as being probably better long-term for the environment than a bunch of individual plantings that may or may not be maintained by landowners scattered about, you know, the distance of an entire pipeline. So this is one of the changes that was enabled by our changing of the tree and shrub mitigation plan and allowing more flexibility and a more broader focus on overall environmental gain versus just counting trees and planting them where they were closest to where they were taken out. So I think this is a great project. I'm excited to see how it is carried out and what kind of fruits it brings in the end. But I appreciate the company's approach to this and think it's a really good example of what we're looking for in terms of new approaches to the tree and shrub mitigation.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just want to add, and you mentioned it, but I agree that I think the company has done a nice job of planning here. And you mentioned the Petroleum Council's planting program. I think that a lot of the initiative for that creation of that program was the work that we do with companies on tree and shrub mitigation and problems that we were working to resolve in the past and that sort of thing. And because of of what I see as an extremely good and valuable program. I've followed it over the years and watched their reports, and along with Denbury in this case, I just want to say hats off to Ron Ness and Brady Pelton and Tessa Sandstrom over at the Petroleum Council for creating and continuing with that program. I think it is a good way to help these companies who are not necessarily professional tree planters to do the best job possible in some of these areas. It's extraordinarily difficult to get things started once they've been damaged by facilities like this. This is a great way for them to find places to put the trees where they're wanted, and then have some background on a proper way to get it done. And so hats off to them.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve.
And hats off to you, Commissioner, because you kind of spurred that when we were starting to try and find a better way than our previous method for tree and shrub mitigation. So thank you to you, too.
Thank you. And staff did a lot of hard work on that as well. So I think it's a win-win for everybody, and hope that it pays off in the long run. All right, my final item on the agenda today. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company 230 KV transmission line, Wharton County siting application case number PU-21-151.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. On July 26th of 2021, MDU filed a final combined application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route to construct, own, and operate approximately 1.5-mile-long electric transmission line near the Heskett Station north of Mandan in Wharton County. On August 4th, the commission deemed this application complete and issued a notice of filing and hearing. That hearing was scheduled and held for October 7th in Mandan City Hall. On November 19th, commission staff issued a notice of noncompliance because MDU testified at the public hearing that transmission structures 1 through 6 had been constructed prior to filing an application with the commission to obtain a certificate of corridor compatibility or route permit. So during the hearing, we learned all about this project. The project is a replacement of existing facilities and will perform the same function as the current facilities. The line relocation is necessary because of the closure of Heskett's 1 and 2 coal-fired generating stations. They had to realign the transmission line to connect with the gas-fired generation facility. MDU seeks a project corridor that is 200 feet wide, as depicted on the supplement's Mandan Reroute Avoidance Exclusion Map, Exhibit Number 4. The total cost to this project is approximately $1.3 million. MDU initiated correspondence with all the appropriate state and federal agencies with that and got their input. They conducted an assessment that included natural resources desktop review of federally listed threatened and endangered species and species under the North Dakota State Wildlife Action Plan. And let's see, they did class 1 cultural resource inventory also across the study area. They conducted surveys for wildlife, threatened and endangered species, critical habitats, wetlands, water bodies, trees, saplings, shrubs, and across the entire survey area. They conducted a class 3 field survey across the survey area, and the SHPO has determined there's been a good faith effort to avoid impacts to significant sites. They surveyed for exclusion areas. There are none. They surveyed for avoidance areas. Areas within 500 feet of inhabited rural residents are designated as avoidance areas. MDU has located the route greater than 500 feet from all of the inhabited rural residences. Let's see. The project will be constructed according to standards of the Rural Utility Services, National Electric Safety Code, Institute of Electric and Electronics Engineers, American Society of Civil Engineers, and the American Institute of Steel Construction and Concrete Institute. They have prepared safety emergency plans for the projects. No trees, shrubs, or saplings will be removed. And after construction, MDU will use a weed-free, regionally specific seed mixture for revegetation. So all in all, the biggest challenge on this project is originally the, well, there's two of them. One, they started constructing without receiving a siting permit first. That issue will be handled separately with staff in terms of possible penalties for not receiving a permit before commencing construction. The second issue was they originally constructed the line too close to some of the inhabited residences. They had difficulty getting waivers from those residences. And so despite, you know, quite a lot of back and forth between the company and those folks living down there, they could not come to an agreement. And so they actually moved the line outside of the 500 feet and are just proceeding under this request outside of the 500 feet, which basically eliminates the issue for us. They are outside of the avoidance area, so that issue has been handled. So with that, I think that we're ready to approve this line. Obviously, this was disappointing that MDU, who is one of our longest standing utilities and has been involved in the creation of a lot of the laws under which they operate, that they stumbled this way on this project. The hearing process is intended to avoid things like constructing too close to rural residences, and that's, you know, so they ended up having to bear the cost of moving that line as a result of proceeding too quickly, not following the siting rules, and we could have avoided all of that if they had gone about. But they know, they well understand the problems, and I think have made the changes internally to address this issue and prevent any such thing from happening in the future. So we need to proceed with this. They meet the requirements under the law as it stands now after making those changes, and I think this project is ready to be approved and needs to be completed in order to complete all the changes that are occurring on that site and the important connection to that Heskett plant. So with that, I'm ready to support this order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. That concludes my portfolio. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, Ryan. Randy. You're right. I was thinking I only had one, three. I have four. All right. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Highland Crude LLC, 2.9 mile crude oil pipeline, Williams County siting application case number PU-21-353.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. All right, so on July 30th, Highland Crude filed with the PSC application for this 2.9 mile 8-inch crude oil pipeline in Williams County. We had deemed that application complete and held the hearing on November 22nd in Williston. This is a pretty straightforward line. It's 2.9 miles of 8-inch steel crude oil. It's going from the Highlands Epping Station to an interconnection point with the Dakota Access Transmission Line. The project will have a flow rate of up to 62,800 barrels per day, and the estimated cost of the project is $5.4 million. Highland initiated correspondence with all the appropriate federal, state, and local agencies. They conducted the Class 1 cultural resource surveys, and they conducted all the other field surveys for wetlands, water bodies, threatened and endangered species, critical habitats, noxious weeds and trees, saplings, shrubs, and also conducted a 0.5-mile line of sight survey for raptor nests. They did a class 3 report and submitted that to SHPO, and SHPO has concurred with a finding of no significant sites affected. So they've evaluated the site for exclusion avoidance areas and for all the selection criteria and policy criteria. The studies and surveys did not record any exclusion areas. They did not record any avoidance areas either. And the project will have no significant adverse effects on the commission's selection criteria. They employed a number of mitigation factors in their plans for the project, including that they will the pipeline will be monitored and controlled by a 24-hour, 7 days a week control room in Houston, and has all of the appropriate monitoring technologies on the system. So with that, and the one concern when a project is approved is kind of late and after the construction season, is how are they going to handle winter construction, because they do want to move forward and construct this as soon as possible. And so there are ordering provisions in this order that say that in the event that construction is undertaken by Highland after topsoil has frozen to the point that frost inhibits proper soil segregation, Highland will follow applicable winter construction guidelines as given in the North Dakota State University Extension Service publication R1728, successful reclamation of lands disturbed by oil and gas development and infrastructure construction, and by the INGA Foundation planning guidelines for pipeline construction during frozen conditions. Those are two requirements that we started implementing in a number of years back when we saw some of the problems that were occurring for improper construction during frozen conditions. And so with that extra ordering provision in place and the company's commitment to following those safe construction practices in winter, I think this project is ready to be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. All right, that concludes my portfolio. Turn it over to Commissioner Chrisman.
Before I'll start, I'll just say that I'm sure the Highland Crude people who were probably listening in and on your previous motion that you said was the last on your agenda, so knowing that they're anxious to get started on this project, I'm sure that they're breathing a sigh of relief now.
I'm sure. I don't know how I
got done.
Forgot about that. I stuck something in between it in my folder.
Okay. I move the commission reject the revised decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed on November 12th, 2021. Which would have replaced the decommissioning plan and cost estimate approved by the commission on October 21st, 2020, in Tatanka Wind Power LLC, Tatanka Wind Farm, Dickey County, decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-10-73.
Second.
Mr. Secretary, I have a substitute motion. Is the proper time for that now or after discussion?
I would do the discussion and make the motion.
Okay.
So, first of all, I want to point out, so that people don't think that I've forgotten our own rules and traditions, that I do remember that we have a tradition here that has been going on for decades, that any of the commissioners can lay a motion over for till the next meeting. I think that that's an important tradition. It allows us to make sure that we don't get caught off guard and make decisions that we're not prepared for or lose the opportunity to get the information we need or to just have absences cause problems. But this, and so based on where I thought maybe the sentiment was going at our work session, it might seem like a logical time to play that card, but I think that tradition is there for the reasons that I laid out, and not to take advantage of a rare vacancy on the commission. And so I just have too much respect for the two of you and for this commission to play that card here. So I'm going to just do my best to be persuasive instead. The gist of this is a wind farm. There are 61 turbines. They're 1.5 megawatt turbines. Down right near the South Dakota line, east of the Missouri River. In fact, part of the wind farm actually is in South Dakota, but the 61 turbines that I referred to are the North Dakota share of the Tatanka wind farm. They're proposing a new method to lower the cost of their decommissioning, where instead of deconstructing the hub with cranes like it was constructed, it would be kind of like, you know, the old films of the guys out with the axe cutting down a tree. You cut around the bottom, except for in this case, then you would hook onto it with dozers or something and pull it over. And the estimates are that it will reduce the cost pretty significantly. We did, as the motion indicated, approve a decommissioning cost estimate that was provided by Tatanka just 14 months ago, and that is for $15.75 million. That was the plan that they brought in. Apparently they refused to take yes for an answer, and so they came in last spring with this felling proposal. I will point out that something that they're offering to do as part of this is take out an extra foot of concrete. These older wind farms are only required to remove 3 feet. Newer ones are required to remove 4 feet. And so that is a nice offer. And I because I'm completely opposed to this idea, I don't want to fail to acknowledge that is appreciated. But I don't think it definitely doesn't bring me over the top on doing this. So the $15.75 million that has been approved as a decommissioning plan with this plan would be reduced to a little under $9.5 million. So it's about we'd be left with about 60% of the financial assurance that the current decommissioning plan requires. Part of their testimony on this involved a comparison with a wind farm in Iowa that used this method. That wind farm, although this wasn't in the testimony, from what I've been able to gather information, and so I don't know if it's right. One of the problems with this whole plan is, to me, a lack of information. My understanding is that in that case, 55 turbines were replaced with 15 turbines. And the 15 turbines have about 40 megawatts of output. And so if one is safe to assume that the output is the same, those 55 turbines were 3/4 megawatt turbines. Half the output of the ones we're talking about here. One of the statements that really concerned me in the decommissioning plan, I'm just going to read a short portion of it. It says, as evidence of the success of this technique, we have reviewed confidential information prepared for the decommissioning of the Cerro, if I'm pronouncing that right, Gordo Wind Project in Clear Lake, Iowa, dated October 2018. So the company that wants to reduce their financial assurances has reviewed some confidential information. And that's an important part of our decision making on this. We would never accept that standard in a rate case, for instance, that the utility company has reviewed some confidential information and then comes in and tells us what it is. They would provide that confidential information and request that we deem it confidential so that the public doesn't see it. but we would actually see it, not just be told what was there. That is something that I find very concerning. And we have built over these years a program that was important to me when I first contemplated coming to this commission. I believe it can work. Now, I worry just about every day that under the current system, the wind farms that we have, I worry whether we have enough financial assurances. Because it's kind of an unknown. These are big turbines, and we don't really know for sure what it's going to cost when they start being deconstructed. But now, to assume that no one else is going to follow suit on this, if we're going to allow this and cut decommissioning costs by down to 60%, I would be shocked if others don't follow suit. And I really do worry about what happens when these start coming back on us, that we are way underestimating this. And I just think that with the limited amount of information we have, this proposal ought to be denied, and we should go with the decommissioning plan that the company brought to us only 14 months ago, and make sure that I mean, there's two parts of these financial assurances. One is making sure that we have enough money to do this if they don't. But also, and we've seen it in the mining industry for years, the other part of it is making sure that you want it to be enough so that they just do it, so that they're better off doing it themselves than having us do it. And I think that we really venture into dangerous ground if we accept the proposal, and that's why I make the motion to deny.
Well, I did second the motion to give you the opportunity to make your case. I won't be supporting the motion, and the reason is, I'll start with, cost has been referenced numerous times, and while we want to ensure that there are enough funds available to decommission a facility, I think the company has provided that there will be adequate funding to do that. The commission also has the opportunity to bring an operator in and ask for a new decommissioning plan at any time, or renewed at 5-year intervals. If cost is a part of the conversation, although it is not a part of the legal criteria in which we make a decision on decommissioning, this cost estimate is in line and actually a little bit higher on a per turbine basis in comparison to other similar facilities that the commission has already approved decommissioning plans for. So it would be tough for me to say, well, you don't have enough money, when the commission has already, to do the work that needs to be done, when the commission has already approved decommissioning plans that have lower amounts through what might be considered a more traditional way of decommissioning the facility. But even that, there really isn't what I would call a clear traditional path to decommission a facility, because very few have been decommissioned across the country, and I don't know that any have in North Dakota. So I think we have to be very careful in terms of making cost a criteria. More about the review, is the funding adequate to get the job done as the plan states? And I believe that is the case in this situation. The other thing for me, and this is a really big thing, it's the landowner consideration. There are a number of landowners that have leases when it comes to any wind facility. And I think the company made a very compelling argument that this would help reduce compaction by not having to bring the same sized equipment in that would cause more disruption to the land surrounding any individual turbine. So I think from a landowner consideration standpoint, that's incredibly important that we're respecting the fact that they still have to put this land back into production once a wind facility disappears from the landscape. So I think that those two things, I think it's in the best interest of landowners to have the turbines toppled and term, you know, versus bringing in heavy cranes that are going to increase compaction. The company, I believe, made a concession to remove the blades prior to toppling, which was a concern that there would be fiberglass residue on the prairie and on the landscape. That has been alleviated. That will be the same process to remove the blades as it would be in what might be, again, deemed a more traditional way of decommissioning a facility. So they made that adjustment to the plan, which I appreciated, and now we're talking about just toppling the tower itself once the blades have been removed. So I think it makes sense to go with a plan like this. And frankly, we don't have supporting data either way. We don't have compaction studies to say, well, this is based on science and data, regardless of the method used. But we also don't have data that says it indicates that it won't work. So if that had been presented and here's why it doesn't work, this is going to be new, and I think we'll be able to learn as we watch other facilities across the country be decommissioned. And if there are concerns related to this method, which I don't believe there will be, but if there are concerns or issues raised, we can. The commission has has the ability to make adjustments as needed.
So would now be a proper time to
yes
present my substitute motion? Okay. I move the commission approve the revised decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed on November 12th, 2021, which replaces the decommissioning plan and cost estimate approved by the commission on October 21st of 2020 in Tatanka Wind Power LLC, Tatanka Wind Farm, Dickey County, decommissioning plan and cost case number PU-10-73.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. So I share a lot of Brian's conclusions on this, and I do, Commissioner Christman, I really appreciate you allowing this to move forward today, because in all fairness, Commissioner Crosius did spend a lot of time on this, and I think it's appropriate that his input is included in the final decision, because he's been deeply involved in the last couple of months in all of our conversations about it. So thank you for bringing it forward and allowing his vote and input on the decision as well. There's really, I do appreciate your focus on the overall program as a whole, in recognition that what we do here will probably impact other facilities and decommissioning plans. But I think that that's the natural part of innovation. And this is a new technology that the company has learned about, brought forward, studied. We've asked a lot of questions, and I agree with Commissioner Crosius that I don't know any more and don't have any more evidence on the traditional method and its impacts than I do on this newer method. In fact, I probably know more about this newer method than the traditional method of decommissioning with the huge cranes. So I feel that the company has provided a good amount of information about how this will be done with the mobile cranes, the removal of the blades, the lowering of the towers, not the crashing of them. They'll be lowered down. It just stands to reason to me that it is very likely a preferable method. There's less impaction. There's less potential environmental damage with getting the cranes out there and other things. There's fewer staff needed, so it's safer from a workforce standpoint. So those are the positives to this method, in addition to that it's less costly for the company, which all these kinds of costs ultimately find their way back to ratepayers in one way, shape, or form. There's a couple other things that I think are better about this. One is the companies agreement to eliminate 4 feet of the foundations, the concrete underground. That's a significant improvement. And this plan calls for the company to bond for the financial assurance. That's an improvement over others as well, and it makes the money readily available to us. And I think that's an important component of this Tatanka approach. And I don't think you can emphasize enough that we've already approved projects. If you look at it per turbine removal cost, we've already approved 6 projects that are about the same size as this one. And in all but one of those, this proposal provides more money per turbine than the other ones. So I think that suggests that we were comfortable with the amount we were getting in the other ones per turbine on the old method. This should provide enough funding to cover this cost, or if we were to need to go a different route, a different method as well. So I think that I'm comfortable with the overall size of the bond per turbine, and that I think gives me comfort that this package and the overall amount that we're going to be getting from the company in a bond is going to be sufficient for decommissioning this project when the time comes, be it by the company itself or worst case scenario by the commission. So I that's why I'm ready to approve the company's November 12th decommissioning plan.
We have a substitute motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on the substitute motion?
Well, I'm going to take one more stab at this before it's too late and respond to a couple of things that have been said. Took some notes. First of all, yes, we can bring them in for a review anytime. Well, anytime except for when they cease operations and either walk away from it or go bankrupt or something like that. Then we can't anymore. Then we've got what we have, and this will be 60%. If we approve this, it'll be 60% of what we'll have if we don't approve it. Both of you mentioned the per turbine basis. I have always emphasized that ought not be our comparison. Each of these wind farms is completely different. I saw from staff the review of 6 similar wind farms as well. All of them are immediately adjacent to 4-lane highways and high traffic areas near large cities. It's different getting a contractor down to Forbes than it is to Bismarck or Dickinson. It's also different when the land is largely flat and easily traversable and not primarily native grass species. The company mentioned that in this whole wind farm, there's 1/4 of cropland. This is going to be very, very complex area to reclaim wherever any damage is done. There was mention of landowner consideration and leases, and that was actually something that I wanted to address a little bit more. I inquired about that because we don't know a lot about the landowner leases. I presume the leases are for the road, whether that's 30 feet, 40 feet, something like that. And then the turbine, and probably bigger than what you would see of the hub, but something to cover the foundation and such. Not necessarily whole quarters of land. But if that is the case, when we plan to fell these, and there was much discussion about felling them on the roads, That presumes that there is a road going straight to these turbines that is at least the length of the hub. But there's not. If you drive down there, it's more like driving along a road and then off to the side is a turbine with a short road leading up to it. If they pull it on the road, the top of it is going to go over the top of the main arterial road. If they pull it so that the top falls on the main arterial road, it is going to cut across there. We don't know if that's in the leases. And when they're asked about the leases, it says, private landowner easements and leases are outside the jurisdiction of the commission. Tatanka has the necessary access and land use rights to decommission the facility in the manner described in the plan. So they have the leases to do that. But if they cease operations and realize that the costs are going to be a lot more than what they have on hand here and decide to walk away from it and leave us with the costs, I don't know that we have the leases. It was mentioned that there's not a lot of data. Well, one of the pieces of data we don't have is whether we can fell these across and cut across off of the roads and the immediate area surrounding the turbine. I certainly don't know that. And keep in mind, there could be incentive at some point, as, you know, inaccurate as it might be. I can very easily imagine someday when some of these wind farms start to reach the point of being replaced with others and not just continuing on or repowering. There's probably going to be landowners there that don't want them taken down immediately under the assumption that maybe if they stay, someone else will pick this up and start producing power and keep paying me for it. So it's not a certainty that these landowners are going to be immediately wanting them down, but if that company is bankrupt, what are we going to do? Because it's not like it just sets there and waits until they give us the easement. Somebody's going to keep the lights on there and maintain things. And I feel like we have built a presumption that that's us. And I want to emphasize, this is stunningly beautiful terrain. There are multiple waterfowl production areas down in that region. It's hilly wherever this grassland is worked up. It is not going to be easy to reclaim it into grasses and prevent erosion. When they talk about decompacting, if compaction occurs, I'm not sure you'd want that and dig up more native grasses than what's already been disrupted. It is a beautiful area. In fact, one of the waterfowl production areas has kind of a long, narrow piece of acreage that extends outside of it, and this wind farm actually surrounds that area of the waterfowl production area on three sides. It kind of cups it like that. This is not an area like we think of on these other wind farms out here by Wilton or out west of Mandan. It's a much, much different terrain. I hope you will consider what would happen if we walked out of here today and we found out that some facility had gone bankrupt and was leaving the decommissioning up to us. Who on our staff exactly handles that? And what if we are a little short-funded? It's not reclamation's job. That's mostly federally funded. That's coal reclamation, not wind farms. We don't know the easement conditions. We're basing it on confidential information that we didn't get to see on how successful this was in Iowa. And we are going to reduce the financial assurances down to 60% of what we just approved 14 months ago. Frankly, I fear that if we approve this substitute motion, we will gut this program to where I'm going to seriously consider reconsider whether we should have the program, because I don't know that this agency wants the responsibility for doing this decommissioning work without knowing the easement status, knowing that it's something that can't just sit there. It needs maintenance because these lights have to stay on for the protection of aircraft, without knowing that without some level of confidence, more than what I have in this, that we have enough money to do it.
Well, I've got a few more, and obviously we could go back and forth on this for a long time. So that's certainly not my intent, because I don't want it to become a tick for tack. But I think you've painted a very inaccurate picture, to be perfectly honest. I have a tremendous amount of confidence in staff when they have gone through and they have reviewed these plans, regardless of the technique used. A tremendous amount of confidence that they have been thorough and they have been thoughtful in the process and done the calculations necessary to ensure that adequate funding will be available. If a bankruptcy did occur, the bond does not go away. And it would be incumbent upon the commission to oversee the reclamation, but that is no different than if it were to occur with the coal reclamation program as well. We would be the stewards of that decommissioning plan, and we would take that on. And that is a role that we do play, that the commission does play. And one of the things that really worries me about some of the things said is that when government discourages innovation and efficiency for any industry, for any energy type, I think government has, in effect, lost its way. And we should be encouraging that. And when the private sector champions a better way to do things, that's a win-win across the board. So I think we have to send the right message, and the philosophy, in my opinion, in terms of the role of government, is to, yes, obviously govern, but also not to stand in the way of innovation. So I think that is just something that I don't want anyone to get the wrong message as we're having this conversation. We could look at any area of North Dakota, and I think the entire state from corner to corner is beautiful. Everyone has their own definition of beauty. I think the Western Dakotas, the Badlands, are incredibly beautiful. I think the Red River Valley is beautiful in its own way as well, and the midsection of the state. So from east to west, north to south, the state as a whole is just an incredible place. So there are more sensitive areas, but then that also goes back to suggesting the commission may have erred in the siting process. And I don't think that's the case. So, you know, ultimately, one other point that you made in terms of landowners, if a landowner chooses to leave a turbine up, this is their property. This is their decision. Ultimately, they might bear the responsibility to keep that lit. But that's a landowner right that only they can decide, because the state doesn't own that property. That's held in private ownership. So hopefully landowners at that point in time will make the appropriate decision. But we're going to have to work through this entire process. Again, I don't think it can be emphasized enough. The amount per turbine, the comparison has been made, and it wasn't with 40 different decommissioning plans. It was with six, I believe, or seven other like facilities, actually six other like facilities that were arguably very similar in nature, and none of them are going to match up perfectly. But when the company brings forth a plan that is consistent and actually higher than some of those that have already been approved, I would deem that very reasonable. So again, I'm going to support the substitute motion. And
just a couple of final thoughts from me too. I think that it's not accurate to say that this would gut our program. This would require the company to provide almost $10 million in financial assurances to decommission this project. That's a substantial amount of money, and it's 100% of what the third-party engineer who certified the plan that was provided to us estimated needed was needed under this method. So I think it's a fair approach. I think it's a substantial amount of money. The bond will be available to help assure that this happens when the time comes. And I think that, you know, this method might very well have less impact on those native prairies when you aren't dragging a huge crane across the entire length of the wind farm. You're using a much lighter, smaller crane that is going to have less impact on its, you know, movement across the wind farm. So I think all in all, it's a reasonable plan. It's a new approach with a substantial amount of money still behind it, and I think it's fair for the commission to support it.
We have a substitute motion and second. Is there any further discussion on the substitute motion? Sensing none. On the substitute motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay.
Nay.
The substitute motion is approved.
I move the commission approve the Coteau Properties Company request for a variance to the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for 19.7 acres of reclaimed native grassland in Section 22 of Township 146 North, Range 88 West, Mercer County, where revegetation was delayed on the areas occupied by a sedimentation pond, stockpiles, and three conservation tree plantings.
Second.
So on October 15th of this year, Coteau filed a request for the variance for 19.7 acres of reclaimed native grassland at the Freedom Mine. A variance will allow areas affected by a sedimentation pond, SPGM stockpiles, suitable plant growth materials, and three conservation tree plantings to be bond released with the adjacent lands that were reclaimed in 2011 and 2012. So all the surrounding area has met their 10-year area. It's just their 10-year time period. It's just these three small pieces that were a couple years behind because of the stock pond and the piles and the trees. Policy allows the commission to grant variances to the 10-year revegetation period. Variances must be small in size when compared to the entire reclamation tract. Small is defined in policy as an area comprising less than approximately 20% of the complete reclamation tract. This request is about 10.7% of the total tract, so well within that definition. Reclamation procedures used on variance areas need to provide the same protections to public health and safety as those used on the surrounding reclamation tracts. The 19.7-acre variance request area will be attached to 163 acres of adjacent reclaimed native grassland. The request areas were reclaimed and seeded in 2014, so they're just that little bit behind. Approval of the variance request will allow Coteau to pursue final bond release 2 years earlier than otherwise allowed. The variance area was inspected on November 3rd and again on December 15th of this year. The variance area is established with a real dense stand of native perennial vegetation and is providing excellent protection from erosion. And so based on the field inspection and information contained in the variance request, the Reclamation Division recommends approval of this request for a variance, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All right. I think that concludes your portfolio, Commissioner Crossman. Commissioner Crossman.
All right. the last motion in order that I will present.
We could always have a special meeting tomorrow.
Yes, once again, the last order and motion I will present. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusion of law and order in Northern States Power Company Advanced Prudence, 200 megawatt Heartland Divide Wind 2 application, case number PU-20-433.
Second.
This was an ADP that has been brought forth to the commission by Northern States Power Company. Again, it's a 200 megawatt Heartland Divide Wind project that also, as a part of this, includes an agreement with Honeycrisp to provide electricity to that entity. So it's unique. It is in part a business-to-business proposal, ADP request. So it's got the B2B component, but it also has a system-wide component as the company is presenting it. The order is written as such to deny this particular ADP, which is somewhat of a departure from previous ADPs that the commission has looked at and granted approval for. And for me, it really boils down to this. There are minimal cost savings associated with this advanced determination of prudence that the company is seeking. So I think that's an important component, but I think an even bigger, larger component is that the commission now has what I would define as a new tool in the toolbox, and that is, in the past legislative session, we were given resources necessary to actually take a real hard look at the integrated resource plans that do come into the commission, and they have in the past as well. The issue has been on the resource side of the equation. We have a very lean staff in the public utility division, incredibly effective. And in comparison, for example, our neighbors to the east, that commission has more than 40 in their public utility division. We have 7, and we also have significantly more sitings. So the legislature did give the commission the opportunity to take a better, more thorough look at these plans because now we have the resources in terms of financial support to do so. And as a part of that, I think as renewable penetration increases and the energy mix changes, reliability becomes an increasingly greater concern, or becomes a greater concern. And in the past, we've really looked at advanced determinations of prudence in a very singular sense. But I think the time has come where we have to take a more holistic approach, look at these IRPs, look at the IRPs in a comprehensive way, because energy markets are changing and reliability has become a growing concern. So as baseload has disappeared, and again we're seeing a shift, we can take a look at not only this resource, but others that would be combined with it and be more methodical in the approach. So for that reason, I'm going to support the order as it is written, which is to deny the company's request for an ADP on this, but it doesn't mean that it isn't still in play when the integrated resource plan is reviewed and the company still has the opportunity to bring this before the commission again. But again, I think it's just very important that the commission, in my opinion, even though obviously I'm departing the scene, but take a more holistic approach to these requests in the future. And we just want to make sure it's just important that it's done correctly so the lights still go on when people flip the switch 5, 10 years from now and longer.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will say I've really struggled with this one, and had contemplated bringing a substitute motion on this one as well. But in the end, for a lot of the same reasons, actually, Brian, that you just outlined, in terms of the ADP process, I've struggled with this one because I feel boxed in. We previously approved an ADP for a similar request for the company for part of this load that based one of the big tech companies is proposing a data center in Minnesota, and they want it to be 100% served by renewables. And so in order to do that, because they need power 24/7, they can't count on the renewables 24/7. They want to purchase, and they want a facility, certain amount of power, 200 megawatts dedicated, that they can have all the RECs for, so they can cover their costs or cover their power with renewable power, and say that they're 100% renewable. They'll be taking their power from the grid, which will be the mix of whatever's on the grid at the time, but they will be able to say in a paper that they're 100% renewable. So we approved a project for that previously a couple years ago, so I feel kind of boxed in by that approval. At the same time, a lot has changed just in those couple of years, and the biggest thing for me was the IRP process, which I've advocated for a number of years for the reasons Brian outlined. Looking at these things in isolation doesn't work anymore. It's, you know, a wind facility has other impacts, and just examining whether it reduces costs isn't enough. We have to be able to look at how it affects their capacity needs, how it affects the transmission grid, how all these other costs come to play as a whole for customers, and what's the best mix. So ADPs, you look at one and you make your decision based on just that case. And it's just not the appropriate way to make resource additions and decisions in today's environment. And so I'm uncomfortable with a lot of things that are being presented in this project. The cost savings are potentially pretty small. The load that it seeks to serve is pretty... it may or may not materialize. This project is actually in a different zone for MISO than what Xcel is in. There is just a lot of uncertainty and the project itself, and also it's a concerning trend that one big customer is demanding resources from the integrated system and demanding the resource mix that it wants and insists upon from an integrated system that serves multiple states. And so for all of those reasons, I also am going to support denying this ADP, and look forward to reviewing this and all of the company's resource proposals and plans through the IRP process.
I think everything's been said, but this is one of those where not everybody said it. And so this one part, I just want to repeat, because I would hate for stories to come out of our meeting talking about the ultimate customer here that is pushing for this and their claims to be completely carbon free with their energy. Frankly, I think most products, if they advertise their product with that level of deception, they would probably get charges brought against them. But because of the complexity of the energy industry, these large tech companies are able to throw this thing around that, you know, we're going to be completely carbon free. And so they force all kinds of initiatives on the utility companies that the rest of us have to live with and pay for, but so that they can have added the amount of carbon-free power to the system that's equivalent to the amount of power they're going to use. But in the meantime, they use whatever's available. And on days like today when the wind's not blowing, they're not using carbon-free power. And if they want to claim that, they ought to shut down on days like today. It's as silly as, you know, I spent my whole life before coming here raising a whole lot more food than what I could eat. But I never claim that I raise all the food that I eat. It's just absurd that they even get away with making these kinds of claims. But that doesn't have to do so much with the motion here or the vote. I just hate it when stories come out and mention these companies wanting to be carbon free with their energy.
You know, before we take the vote, I just want to make a few more comments and commend our chair, Commissioner Fedorchuk, for her leadership with the legislature on the integrated resource plan review process and getting the resources. I was a little apprehensive at first as we started the conversations, but when I look at where we're at today and talking about this ADP, for example, the time is now to be able to have those resources in place and to be able to do a comprehensive, conduct a comprehensive review on what a utility is proposing for their energy mix, for their transmission needs, and really taking a hard look at all of those things. And I think it, without question, is something the utilities will appreciate too, getting a clear sense of direction from the commission on how they can proceed or should proceed in the future. So I think it's a win-win. And again, that what I've stated really goes back to the comments. I've stolen a few of yours. Again, that was just really, really some great forward thinking on your part, and appreciate that leadership.
It's good that we're all on the same page.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All righty. That concludes our agenda. Moving into announcements or our regular
Madam
agenda.
Chair?
Yes.
One final piece of business. Does Commissioner Chrisman wish to have a dissenting opinion?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. So, looking ahead,